You're listening to Around Comics.
Are listening to Around Comics, episode 439, Trade Talks, The League, Extraordinary Gentlemen, yeah. Volume 1 by Alan Moore and
Kevin O'Neill.
That's right. What's up, Jim?
It's the workday work edition.
It is the special workday work.
And yeah. Throw us up on the conference room TV, right? You know?
Get us introduce us to your office man, boss.
It's like a Teams call. It's like the best Microsoft. We should have done it in Zoom or something.
Just
oh god.
Oh no, nah, this bad vibes.
This is the most awake. This is the most awake and sober I think we've been in years on the show.
This will probably be the best episode, or maybe we do,
or the worst,
yeah. Or the worst, or the worst. I don't know. I think being more alert.
It is a weird thing, like.
Less tired.
Yeah, I haven't been, I haven't had a couple of drinks in me already. I'm not get the winding down. Yeah. I gotta go back to work after this.
I'm like drinking coffee. I'm like, yeah. The days ahead.
You guys
of me.
Notice I got a new camera. I switched my basement around completely. I'm on the other side.
Mm-hmm. You can see like messing with my world.
You can see some comic books back there. My Stan Lee signed Spider-Man print back there. My Lee Weeks nice. Superman.
I've rearranged that, right? Freshen it up.
I got this weird camera that's making me look very blown out. I don't know why.
No, you look fine. You look beautiful, man. Love it. Own it.
Yeah.
It's great.
There we go. No. Yeah.
All right. I mean, I don't know if people are watching us on like an 86-inch conference room TV. We all look like shit. Absolutely. But that's just.
I'm looking a little puffy. I'm looking a little puffy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sorry. What version did you guys read of League? Did you
originally
grab your? Or... Well, originally, I'm sure you read it when it was coming out from. America's Best Comics, which this is, was this the first Alan Moore America's Best title?
No.
Or was Tom that Strong? Tom Strong?
Is what I remember. This was actually, I think, a wild, like this was, it was America's Best, but it was after Wildstorm had already
acquired, which that's that whole story about how Alan Moore spent years trying to get away from DC after the whole like V for Vendetta kerfluffle. And it was pretty public about all of that. And then he goes and starts doing America's Best Comics and they get purchased by DC.
Well, that was the thing. Like it was Jim Lee. So Jim Lee owned Wildstorm and he wanted partner with America's Best Comics, and Alan Moore said, "Fine, I'll do that as long as you promise me that it'll never be part of DC." Because he was very leery of Wildstorm and DC's connection and Jim Lee's connection to DC. And Jim Lee promised him he wouldn't, and then turned around and sold Wildstorm to DC. And Alan's like, "Fuck you!" It was just another fucking ass fucking that Alan got out of the comic book industry. It was just. Yeah. And that was kind
of, at that point, he's like, fuck it, I'm going to Avatar.
Yeah. 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 And now he's just completely done with comics.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Well, good job, Jim Lee. You greedy prick.
Was at Avatar and what, Top Shelf? They took League to Top Shelf.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, I read the original issues back in the day, but for this one, I read the old Absolute edition.
Pretty?
As I'm holding it up, pulling up the old Chris version. I hadn't read this in a while, actually. I took the slip case. Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I can see it. Why would you? I have it right over there.
All right.
I just, like, when I read it and I'm, like, laying down, sometimes if I have the slip. Yeah, like, you know, like, I got weak hands. So this was my pick, and I'm gonna ask a question to start this off with, and I mean this as a compliment to Mr. Alan Moore and Mr. Kevin O'Neill. Is this the dumbest Alan Moore comic in the sense of, like, it is straight up like the goofiest, like, in a good way, where it's just like, this is like,
I think,
like, step on the gas. Yeah. Like, this one's not like the.
I think there's a couple ways to look at it. It's, yeah, I agree. Yes, it is. I will get into how layered it is and all of the references.
I mean, dumbest in the best way possible. I think there can be things that are very dumb that are very good.
I think the movie is exhibit A on how you can take this concept and make it completely ridiculous in all of the wrong
dumbers. Make it even dumber.
You can make it dumber.
Yes. Yeah, because that's when you read it, you're like, oh, I see how you got to that movie from here. Because this, like, I get it. Like, because there's elements of all the dumbest things in the movie they're not from nowhere. Yeah. You know, like, you can see where you could look at this and be like, actually, what if we made it, like, we juiced it up a little bit, like, action movie, you know, like, I can see why it come from that. And it's been such a long time since I read it. And, you know, as I finished it, I was like, this is, even though it's dense, right? Like, there's the whole Jess Nevins annotations of it, of, like, all the little, like, breadcrumbs and, like, little references to things. At its heart, it is pretty much like a straight up, like, goofy romp.
It's an adventure. It's an adventure.
Yeah, it's totally, like, just, yeah. Like, it is, you know, it's very, it's very tongue in cheek. Like, which sometimes I think more, maybe, you know, there's a double edged sword to that sometimes, right? Of, like, you could look at a story like this and you could be like, if you're looking at it straight on, right, without much, like, thought about, like, this is like a goofy romp through, like, Victorian literature, you can look at this and be like, hey, it's a little weird that the bad guys are all, like, pretty stereotypical evil Chinese, like, villains. Right. And, like, if you just look at it straight on, you could be like, this is perhaps a bit strange, unless you look at it, you know, because there in the annotations is actually a quote from Moore where he talks about that, where he's like, yeah, you know, people perhaps could see it that way, except for the, you know, like, the intention is that it is, like, a romp through, like, how sort of ridiculous Victorian like, literature and, like, the stereotypes of what the villains are and the stereotypes of, like, sexual purity and, like, those elements, you know, like, I'll take more for his word.
Can you examine stereotypes without being stereotypical?
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's the thing where it's kind of like, I don't know, man, because people have a hard time figuring out Rorschach's bad. You know what I mean?
You can't write stuff because people are dumb. Like, I'm gonna write. No.
That's what I mean. It's like Moore's explanation, where I'm like, I don't know, man. I think that's a lot of asking people to, like, dissect it to that, like, fine of a level. I think you're definitely gonna get people who are not gonna
take it right on surface, surface.
Right on the, which is aside from the book. But I thoroughly enjoyed reading it. I read all the annotations too, which I've never done. Wow. I read, and I was like, yeah, this is like, I don't know. Is this like more having the most fun?
I mean, I think it definitely is one of, but I think when the whole ABC, the America's Best Comics, when he's doing that, is when he was doing more fun comics. But honestly, I think Moore almost got trapped in, because of Watchmen, he got trapped in this idea of like, oh, he's this serious comic book writer where it's layered and there's all this subtext and there's all this other meaning to his comics. It's like, if you look at most of everything that he wrote outside of that, it's not all like that. Like, it's not, I mean, like, there's a lot of fun stuff. His Superman stuff, his main superhero stuff, a lot of it is very fun, and especially
his Green Lantern stories.
Has no one ever read Halo Jones?
Right, absolutely. Yeah, so there's all sorts of
DR and Quench. I mean, honestly, he started as a fucking comedy writer.
Yeah, I think, but I think there's definitely a lot of fun with this because he's trying to. Like you said, he's poking fun at sort of like the dryness of Victorian era literature and using all those characters and trying to make like a fun adventure story out of it, not something that's really boring and kind of like, you know, but at the same time, I mean, kind of crazy and wacky and like it is way out there. Sure.
Yeah. It's out there. I mean, it's like, you know, when you think about like, they visit like a school for wayward girls who's run by a character who's like a dominatrix, you know, like stuff like that, where it's like he's pulling these weird things and like combining them in like really strange ways to like poke fun at things and to like deflate the idea, you know, like you could get real deep into like what the, you know, the history of England and like the nature of colonialism and like what you think Alan Quatermain represents just on the most basic level as a character, right? Like he was written at a time of sort of like, this is what, you know, our mission in life is for us to go out and like civilize places and like, and spread our culture. Right. And like, Moore kind of makes fun of that. Like Quatermain kind of doesn't, you know, his biggest thing going for him is he's like, I guess I'll do this. Right. Like he's not like a mastermind. He's not like, you know, he's definitely not as like,
I mean, they pull
he's
him.
He's not as cunning as Nemo or Nina, you know, like definitely not like, he's just like along for the ride. And the best thing that can be said for him, and he is a heroic character, is like, yeah, I'll grab this wrench and go fight
this guy. You know, people like, don't want to do. I mean, he'll.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'll jump in. Let's do this.
Yeah, one of my favorite sequences in the book is his withdrawal pages where they lock him in a room in the Nautilus, and he's just fucking strung out.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Do you spend all of your waking moments watching reality TV? Well, you're in good company. I'm Will.
And I'm Marissa. And we're the hosts of Cheers to Chaos Reality TV and Cocktails, a new weekly podcast that covers the ever so entertaining and cringy world of reality television.
Each week, we'll be raising our glasses and diving into the latest drama and chaos from our favorite reality TV shows.
From 90 Day Fiancé to The Bachelor. We've got all your reality favorites covered.
So grab a drink and join us as we clink our glasses to the hilarious and delightful train wrecks of reality TV.
Subscribe now to Cheers to Chaos, Reality TV and Cocktails on your favorite podcast platform.
Yeah. It's just like, those little moments, those elements of that are in there. And just like,
but I think it does, like, you bring up a good point on that with him. You know, it's like, is that a statement on the idea of like, well, the British Empire got a lot of shit done just because you had a bunch of dudes that were like, okay, I'll do that for the queen and for country. I mean, isn't that kind of like how wars are won or how, you know, invasions are, it's just like, okay, I'll do that because it's the, you know, what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean, he's no great mastermind. He's no, like, if any of the characters, you know, Nemo is the one that's maybe the most, like, cunning or most, like, clued in, or he's the one who's sort of like, I don't trust this character, we should do this. Or even Mina is also the one who, like, deduces where, you know, the doctor is building his lighter-than-air ship and all that stuff. And Quartermain's, like, he's along for the ride, right? And, like...
They literally dragged him along. I mean, they dragged him out of an opium den to be a part of it. He, you know, it's like he had no interest. It wasn't like he was planning any of this. And they literally drag him out of an opium den.
He didn't want to go.
So, yeah, like, he had no interest in any of this. Just like, all right, and then
I'm high all day.
Or also, you know, like the back matter story, the Alan Quartermain and the Sundered Veil, you know, where it is about, you know, centered or, again, he's like a drug addict who, like, gets dragged along on an adventure that he was, like, not that into being part of.
I'm not really feeling like,
I'm not into this right now.
But that, you know, it is sort of an interesting take on you know, like the white savior sort of character that he is, you know. But I think that's what Moore is doing with all of these characters, you know, deconstructing them, analyzing them, then putting them back together in a way that he can tell a fun story with them. You know, and it's in some ways this book. I mean, I love League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It's some of my favorite stuff that Alan Moore's ever done. Like that, Tom Strong, I think, is another one that I just absolutely love. Tom Strong and Top 10 is all the ABC stuff. I probably enjoy that way more than like V for Vendetta or From Hell or some of the more, you know,
Swamp Thing.
But, you know, it's that him in that playground, which he does as well as anyone, maybe better than anyone in comics has ever done, of like looking at the history of these characters and the, you know, the mythology, their place in the world, their place in history. And then, like, because he has this insane genius knowledge of all these characters and books and timelines and all this stuff, he's able to, you know, warp that stuff and twist it and play with it. And, you know, as you go through those annotations, it's insane. It is ridiculous the amount of Easter eggs and things that he puts on every single page, and that forced, you know, forces Kevin O'Neill to draw, you know, all these fucking things in there. But it's like, there's not many guys that, you know, that's a Stanley Kubrick level of research for a story.
Oh, yeah.
There's not many people that are doing that kind of a thing with it. But at the same time, then, like, oh yeah, but let's make it a really entertaining adventure story. Like, there's all this.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Yeah. It's like the amount of detail in it, but also the willingness to be like, I'm just going to make up a character, Campion Bond, because it fits the story. Like, because I need a character to do this. So, like, there's both, like, the adherence, like, I'm going to try and piece all these things together, but I'm also just going to, like, say fuck it. And, like, just go wild and just, like, yeah, we'll do this. You know, like, there's, you know, and bringing up Kevin O'Neill is important, too, because, like, I mean, his art in this is just, like, I have a hard time imagining. It's, like, one of those books where it's, like, who else... I have a hard time imagining somebody else doing it. Like, that's just how, like, ingrained that, like, look is to these characters. And, like, the way he sort of, like, his drawing also sort of walks that line of, like, it's kind of a joke, but it's also kind of serious.
I was going to ask you that because, you know, it's like, how much does his artwork really add to the, you know, funny, campy tone of the book, you know what I mean? Like the way, yeah, it's like his art style is so unique in that he can do, you know, drug addiction as well as, you know, violence, extreme violence, which you look like martial law, the amount of extreme violence but then also like really funny, and it all has a walk
just goofy character, goofy looking characters.
I mean, and super like, cartoony. Fucking fish in the porthole. Yeah, you know, and
so much range, so but it is so unique of a style as well.
Yeah, it is. I think absolutely a partnership in this book. I can't imagine O'Neill not being the artist on it. It's just,
and these are.
I think Tom said it's ingrained.
Because I could see someone whose art style is maybe a little more traditionally serious, and I think the vibe of the book would be all weird, because like it does have to like walk that line of sort of like here's an adventure, but like don't take it too seriously, because we're also going to have like a fucking Artful Dodger joke that goes on for like four pages during like the climatic battle. Yeah. We're gonna have
Mr. Hyde ripping people's arms off and
decapitating people.
It's like, we're not going to be too serious, because we're going to take like in the middle of the climatic battle, we're going to have like a extended Oliver Twist joke like going on in the middle. So like, don't get too serious with it.
Do you guys have a favorite league member?
Gentlemen? Do I have a favorite gentleman?
Yeah.
Well, Nemo is, and you know, as we saw, you know, he did what, four volumes of Nemo after this.
Well, Nemo's daughter.
But.
Which are excellent.
But he's one of the more interesting. I don't know. I would say for me, like, I like Hyde. I like the way that he's portrayed in the book, and it's always exciting when he's going to, you know, when he becomes Hyde, and he's kind of pathetic when he's Dr. Jekyll, and you know, and so I don't know. He's probably one of my favorite, but they're all great. I mean, they all have plenty of screen time and do their own things and have their own parts of the story. You know, it's hard to pick any of them.
Yeah. I think it turns into Nina's story. You know, really even kind of from the beginning, but through the entire series to its completion, it really is, you know, she's the central character. But Hyde's great.
I mean, my favorite character in it is Professor Moriarty, because it's just like so obviously Kevin O'Neill and Alan Moore are just like, let's have a villain who could not possibly be any bigger in like whatever the equivalent of Chew the Scenery is in a comic book, you know, where it's like, we're going to like swing big for like how villainous this villain is, you know, and like the way he talks, like the way, like everything. He's just like the archetype, like sinister, like mastermind, like in everything from the way he's drawn to how just like his sort of ridiculously like pompous way of talking.
I feel, did you guys watch, Chris, I know you did, but the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock show, which was one of my favorite, you know, Sherlock Holmes reimagining. But I feel like that Moriarty in that show almost took some inspiration from this Moriarty in some ways, because he does seem like way more villainous, just way more like sinister, fucking evil. And
I'm going to give a speech about like how, you know, like how evil I am, the nature of evil, you know, like,
That guy's awesome. Yeah. But he came off as very cruel. It's cruel for fun.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I don't know if Moriarty was it. I mean, I guess to some degree, but that show, it seemed like, man, they really pumped up the vileness in that villain. I think when I first read this, Mina was certainly probably my favorite character. She's a pretty terrific character throughout the whole book.
She's great.
But I don't know. All I know is, man, this is a perfect book for these absolute editions, the oversized editions, because there's all the little you know, I remember I didn't do it this time around, but, you know, reading the annotations, I certainly did go through at one point and read it with the annotation. So every page I would read the annotations for that page and not move on to the next page until I, you know, and just sort of examining all of the little things, some of the, you know, it's just like an insane amount of things that nobody would, how do you ever catch that stuff?
Yeah.
Seems crazy, but the, you know, the absolute edition makes it a little easier because the original comic size, you know,
of like just fucking ripping some guy in half.
That's what I loved about Hyde.
Yeah, this is a dangerous book if you have an internet connection and the annotations, because there it is just like one rabbit hole after another.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
It just, yeah, it's, well, and it's, and we haven't even really talked about the overall concept of League. It's that Alan Moore's, you know, created this sandbox where everything that has ever existed on the written literary page, it can be a part of this. So all of the characters are literary characters. And so, you know, you get spoilers, you get into like, you know, in later volumes, like Harry Potter, right? Because it's there, it can be used.
Yeah, anything
it all exists
from books.
Yeah.
Do you get, when you guys read the absolutes, do you ever take a peek at like the book that's just the scripts?
Yes.
The Alan Moore scripts, where I'm always like, yeah, damn, dude.
He's famous for that. The overwriting, like
the debt. But also just like the amount of like what's in his head of like how it is always really impressive. Of like, this is like 9 squares. You see a little bit of the shoulder of this character, like in the, you know, like just how clear it is in his mind, yeah, like how like the actual story looks is always like, it's always,
yeah, if he could draw, like, he would just do it all himself.
That's like, I see it in my head. This is how this story goes out there. And like, you know, and the back matter too is so awesome. And just like the stuff, like I love, because it is very much like dopey comics shit, like Paint by Numbers, and it's Dorian Gray, you know, and it's like just like so obviously just inspired by just like lowbrow stupid comics.
And they kept stuff, doing that,
you know,
in volumes as they went on. It seemed like that they expanded that stuff more and more. But that was when I was reading this in single issues, that was one of my favorite things every issue. Like, oh, what are they going to do in the front and the back of every comic? Because there was always a page of like the goofy, you know, advertisements, but Victorian era comic book advertisements, which is just like the most brilliant thing.
I think Moore has a love for lowbrow and leans into it. I mean, he elevates it in a way. It's almost like a, you know, a chef like leaning into like low country food and elevating it. I think he does that with lowbrow comics, and I think it's kind of a passion of his.
Well, I don't think he looks at it necessarily as lowbrow. I don't think, you know what I mean? I don't think
I think he looks at it as lowbrow, but I think he doesn't necessarily see that as a bad thing.
Well, I don't know if you can do that. Right. I don't know if you could do both.
It's okay.
Lowbrow, I think, is but no, I know what you mean. Yeah, he definitely leans into it for sure. And well, I think a part of it is just the stuff that he loves. You know, and it's the things that he excited him about, comics or stories or books or whatever it may be. And, you know,
there's something just really funny about the idea of like, let's treat Sherlock Holmes like if he was Superman and like the Superman died and now like things are bad.
He was holding everything together.
He was holding it all together. And like, now the enemies of the crown can, you know, and it's like seeing like the thread of what makes comic book character, like superheroes, like those threads have always existed in culture, you know, like they're those, you know, like, yeah, Jekyll and Hyde is the Hulk,
oh, right,
kind of, You know, like, yeah, yeah, you know, like, and, you know, like, those threads that, you know, exist in comics, they've been around forever. They're tapping into, like, it's always been people's imaginations of, like, there is somebody who could solve this mystery, you know, with their own mind, you know, like, there's nothing is unsolvable to this person, like, in a world full of problems that are seemingly unsolvable constantly.
Just ask Elon Musk, like, I'll tell you. He'll solve it. We'll solve it.
Yeah.
For $8 a month. He'll solve all
your dollars. So $8. You get that blue check, baby.
Definitely when you look at it, it's like the mythology of any character can go back and you can just sort of like find that cipher for it throughout time. Like, I think, you know, it's that archetype. That's why, you know, archetypes just exist, because like forever, hundreds, thousands of years, we've been telling essentially the same sort of stories and about the same characters, and they just sort of evolve and change in different ways. But yeah, that the, you know, I think Stan create, you know, Stan and Jack creating the Fantastic Four and the Hulk and Captain, you know, it's like those were, you could find those everywhere. Like, you could find those, you know, and that's what Moore, I think, does better than anybody else, though, is like he has this ability to sort of like break them down and understand them so well that then he can play with them better than, you know, than other people. Mm-hmm. Like, he's able to just have the confidence of like, okay, I'm going to, you know, I mean, even like something like Lost Girls, you know, which was his erotic fantasy, you know, comic that he did.
It's porn.
Absolutely. It's porn. But it's also literary porn. It's like he's using literary characters that he, you know, he's understood or read, or, you know, sort of like has this connection to a point where he can then write them as their own characters. You know, like, he can create new stories with these characters that someone else wrote. And that's an interesting thing that he's done over and over and over again. Like, you know,
From Hell.
Yeah, right. Jack the Ripper. And, you know, it's like Watchmen. I mean, all of his stories are sort of that same thing. I'm like, okay, I'm going to re-examine. And, you know, people like try and make it into something like, oh, it's deconstruction. It's, you know, modernism, you know, sort of that kind of thing. And it's like, well, yeah, but it's just also him
telling cool
stories with characters that right. You know, he already sees through the veil. He already understands, like, oh, these aren't new. I can write Superman, but it's like Superman already existed. You know, like, Superman's already been around, so I'm just going to go back and write, you know, something else that with the, you know, Sherlock Holmes or
Tom Strong. You know, he takes you know, Doc Savage and that whole. I still love that concept of this is present day as it was imagined in the 1950s. I mean, what a great concept to write.
Well, that's also the cool thing he does with the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is that he creates an alternate version of Britain that is based on, if these characters existed in this world, what would the world look like? That's a really cool part, you know, which he's done over and over again as well. It's like Watchmen. You know, what would the world look like if superheroes actually did exist? How would that be different than it is in real life? Well, he does the same thing here. Like, what would Britain look like if Sherlock Holmes existed and Alan Quartermain and Mina and, you know, all this mythology melded together in an actual, what would the world look like? Mm-hmm. And it's pretty fucking wild. It's pretty cool. If you had a Nemo, you know, and that technology and that, and you had all these bad guys, you know, sort of running around and doing all these different kinds of things. Like, how would that affect just the general politics and architecture and geography of the planet? Yeah. And he seems to have this incredible mind that he can figure that shit out. Which is just a big, it's a huge part of his writing. But it's also like this weird thing where it's not writing, you know, like it's like rebuilding a world. You know, it's not world building, it's like rebuilding of the world. I mean, nowadays you have a lot of like fiction that's out there that's like alternate history and, you know, that kind of thing. It's like, well, Moore was doing that, you know, decades ago, and nobody called it alternate history or, you know, it's like, but yeah, so it's League is one of my favorite Alan Moore books for sure. And just the whole franchise of comics is, you know, pretty awesome.
Well, it pegs down what Moore is really good at. And that is, you know, and this is kind of the trap that, you know, why we look at like Morrison, you know, differently sometimes. It's like, I think Morrison has great ideas. Sometimes he pulls them off and it's fantastic. Sometimes you're just kind of left scratching your head. League is a perfect example, along with Watchmen, of you can read this and really enjoy it on that surface level of just action movie kind of action story, but then there's the rabbit holes that you can go down, and that's just you know, Moore has that very literary style to him that he can, you know, first and foremost write an entertaining, engaging story.
Yeah, he never loses sight of it. I mean, right. Well, yeah. I don't know if the never. I mean, I think From Hell he lost sight of. That's not a really.
It's a little indulgent. Yeah.
You can fall down a rabbit hole sometimes, and the whole book's just a rabbit hole. And you're kind of like, what's happening?
Yeah.
I mean, I always look at like, it's funny because whenever I read this book and I read the text story, you know, and the Alan Quartermain and the Sundered Veil, you know, and you read it and it's like Alan Moore is obviously like trying to write in that like flowery, like Victorian like style, and it always takes me like three paragraphs to like get into it because I'm always like, what the it's like, oh my god, dude, just like, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right, like this is how people wrote stuff back then, you know. It is like this an incredibly like obtuse style of like wandering like sentences and like, you know, it's just always fun to get back into it and be like, oh yeah,
there's definitely a rhythm to it. Like you have to get into the rhythm of the story, and I think the art does that as well. Like I think that Kevin O'Neill's art is a rhythm to it that you have to get into. And and if you're not into it, you may not dig that art, you know, like, but once you get into it, I think Kevin O'Neill's always been one of my favorite. Like, I still remember like when I first came across Martial Law, that was the comic that nobody seemed to know about that comic book. And that was one of my favorite comic books that I've ever seen in my life. I was just like, what the fuck is this? This is so insanely different than anything I had ever read. And I'm like, why isn't this guy doing more? I didn't really know more about his work and didn't really see a whole lot of his stuff. And I just remember for years and years, it wasn't really until like the internet and like Twitter and stuff that I realized that other people actually even knew Martial Law existed. And I'm just like, what? Why has nobody ever talked about this fucking comic? I love this comic book so much. But yeah, he hasn't done enough work, in my opinion.
What was the League story that was basically a musical? Was that one of the Century?
Yeah, I think so.
Issues. Yeah. And I was just like, son of a bitch, he can even make a comic book musical entertaining.
You son of a bitch. I'm trying to find, I forget where it is in the Absolute Edition, but that like artistic rendering of it might be in the slipcover of the drawing of Alan Moore and Kevin O'Neill, which pretty funny, where Kevin O'Neill's legs like hunched over
he's physically
like he's been chained to a drawing table for like, years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like it's a pretty funny joke, but I've always enjoyed that as well. But yeah, I mean, it's always great to read it, and it's always like fun to dive back into it. And now that there's all these annotations too, of like, you can just fall into an entire thing of like, who's this character? And this just like fall into a Wikipedia hole of reading about like, you know,
Andy Capp.
Alan Quarterman, you know, like, okay, who is this character? Like, I get it.
Now, I will admit, in doing so, I like went down the pathway of like, well, I'm going to now read some Alan Quarterman stories. And it's just like, No, this is not what I want.
There's a reason Moore is making fun of it kind of a little bit. You know, it's like, all right, explorer, what happens when you like, what happens when the explorer kind of finds something, you know, like
right.
shouldn't have found, you know? And it's like, you know, like actually the, you know, your like dumb willingness to like do whatever cost you too, you know, like it's not just all riches are to be found by your, you know, like, all steam, you know, all go, you know, hit the engines, let's go.
Well, and it's also just, you know, shit written in the 1800s is not like,
no,
it's to try and get through. Like,
they are not. I mean, some things do not age particularly.
I don't need to read Bram Stoker's Dracula again.
Oh, I don't know, it's pretty good.
It's such a goofy ass book, like told through letters and like me finding Dracula at the train station, you know, just like dumb, like the way the movie version of Dracula, you know, has kind of loomed so large. And then when you read the book and you're like, this is extremely strange. What was I reading the other day where someone was talking about having read Dracula for the first time? And they're like, how did this dude not get suspicious about going to this castle when he like shows up in this village and everyone's like, oh, you're going there? And then a dude shows up to drive you in a carriage and he has glowing red eyes. And then like, you know, it's like, I guess I've just got to close this real estate deal. So
it's a very white person thing to do.
Well, as someone once said about horror movies, I don't remember who it was, but it's like, if the characters in horror movies did everything sensible, there would be no horror movies.
It would not make any. Yeah, it's like actually I'm just gonna go back to England. Gonna go visit this creepy castle. I'm not going to stay overnight. That's for certain.
I think our trust other people was maybe, you know, a little greater back then.
This guy keeps getting younger and healthier, and I keep getting weaker every day. You know?
It was too.
This late, seems normal. It was too
late. Yeah, the Bram Stoker Dracula the movie with the
Gary Oldman and Winona Ryder,
pretty good.
Keanu
Reeves and. And what's the guy who plays Renfield, the singer? Tom Waits. Tom Waits. Is it Tom Waits?
Was it Tom Waits?
I forget.
Isn't it Tom Waits?
I think it's Tom. Did
he play Renfield?
I don't think I've seen.
Internet, yeah. Tell us.
I think it was Tom Waits. Yeah, Tom Waits. Okay. Plays Renfield, which I think is his best role. I mean, he's been in a bunch of movies, but. He did it. I thought he did an excellent Renfield, I think they're doing a Renfield movie or show coming out soon.
Really?
Yeah, I believe.
Digging deep.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. There's some, I mean, like some of this, like H.G. Wells stuff, The Invisible Man's pretty good book. You know, obviously they're classics and stuff, but it's just like, I don't know. Some of it's kind of hard. Did you guys ever watch Penny Dreadful on Showtime?
I've seen a little bit.
That's obviously, you know, it's League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I mean, it's the same fucking thing. Same concept. But I like that show. I actually liked that the first season or two. But after that, it got a little crazy.
And then And then we can do a whole episode talking about the movie version, League of Extraordinary.
Oof, yeah, written by
Sean Connery's last
Role. James. He retired after that movie. He was never in anything ever again. James Robinson. We had James Robinson on the show a million years ago, and I think he got just drunk enough with us to be honest about
back when he still drank.
I mean, it was a job. He got hired to do a job. He got hired to write the screenplay for this, and it was X2 had just become a huge, one of the first big comic book like mega hits. Mm-hmm. And after that, I think the directive was put them all in black leather and X2 up the shit.
Well, when they started advertising it, the trailers is LXG, I knew.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, what happened?
Something horrible has happened.
Yeah. I was really looking forward to that movie. Like, oh, a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen movie. This is going to be awesome. And
there's parts of it
that I still think the guy who plays Hyde, and I thought the look of Hyde was pretty awesome.
There's moments in the movie where I'm like, yeah, that's cool.
There's
some cool
parts to it, but overall they just sort of like pissed on the story and just
Well, in League, I mean, Nina is a central character. I wouldn't go as far as to call her a woman of action. I mean, she's...
Well, as much as you would be in that time.
Right? And then the movie, I mean, she's doing, cartwheels and backflips and is basically a super...
They comic book the movie. They
way more than the comic
book. Well, no, but what I'm saying is like, it was Hollywood's idea of, it's a comic book movie. So let's...
They should all be like ninjas.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It was
it's not good. It killed Sean Connery.
It killed Sean Connery's career.
His career.
It's like, I'm done.
I'm looking at the cast now, and there's like no one else in it that I don't know anything else that they ever did.
The cast.
Peta Wilson.
Ruined Nina many Harker. Careers.
Never saw her again. Tony Curran. Never saw him again. Stuart Townsend played Dorian Gray. Don't know if I ever saw him again. Shane West is Tom Sawyer. I think he's done a couple of things. Jason Fleming, probably the only one that's ever done anything. But I thought he was great, actually, as Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I thought he was the best, probably the best part of the movie. Unfortunately not a great movie. It's just more reason for Alan Moore to hate Hollywood. It's like, how does he
Nick Lindsay says Stuart Townsend became Charlize Theron's ex.
Oh, there you go. The movie was so bad she divorced him.
Hey, you know what? That's okay. He's still a winner in my
book. On Rotten Tomatoes, the film has an approval rating of 17%. Who are those idiots? Based on reviews from 185 critics with an average rating of 4 out of 10.
Woof.
Yeah. The site's critical consensus reads, just ordinary. LXG is a great premise ruined by poor execution. I would say that's proper. Yeah.
It just kind of continues to show that Alan Moore writes for the drawn page, and his stuff maybe just isn't great to adapt to film.
Well, I mean, I think there's certainly filmmakers that could do it. We just haven't really seen it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What is the most successful as far as like artistically, not commercially, but what would you say the most successful Moore adapted movie or TV is?
Let's see. I would say V for Vendetta. The best of them. It even has its moments. you know.
Yeah, I would just say, yeah, I guess V for Vendetta as far as like being coherent.
Yeah, not being terrible.
It's like a film.
Yeah.
Like just, you know, like a point of view that you could see. You could see like somebody, the, you know, the filmmakers read the book and like got it. Maybe not totally agreed with every point of it, but like understood, like, okay, this is what this story is about. Whereas, which seems like such a low bar, but to be honest, with a lot of like the more stuff, it is like, oh, this person made this, I don't think got what the source material was.
Fat fascism or is bad. Just
ignored it. Or like, yeah, or ignored it, or like, or it didn't quite like I know we've talked about this before, but like Watchmen, where like Zack Snyder like created a thing that looked like it, but was like, but not quite it. Like you can kind of didn't quite get like what Rorschach meant when he's like, you're locked in here with me, right? Like those are the words you said, but like the meaning of it is different in your movie than it is in the book, right? It's just like a real subtle thing where it's like, that's like, I mean, that is the bar. It's like, did the you know, does it feel like of this actual like source material as opposed to like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, where it's sort of like, meh, I can kind of see it, but I don't think you actually got, or you just ignored it and decided that wasn't.
Yeah. Like, kind of like from cool hell.
This, yeah.
What they would, you know, what
I mean, yeah. I don't know how you make a movie of From Hell that feels like the source material.
You don't.
I don't know that you want.
You don't.
Like, yeah, why would you even read that?
Yeah, it's like, no. Yeah. That one I almost just toss out as like, I don't know what you do. Like someone had to make this, I guess they optioned it. So like,
yeah. Yeah. And it's nothing like,
well, that. I think it's like people are just optioning things and then, you know, it's like, well, let's adapt it, but it's, you know, it's one thing to like adapt a novel, maybe. Like, I think people understand, you know, even if you're not an avid reader, you could read a novel and sort of like grasp what you're getting and then turn that, adapt that into a movie. Yeah. Okay, we got to, you know, it's obviously not going to be the novel, but we got the basic gist of it. Where is what?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Like, that's what it feels like they've done with Alan Moore's comics. Is the same thing of like, oh, well, this is the plot, so I'm just going to tell the plot of the story. And it's like, well, but that's not really how he writes. Like the plot is just there to service the scenes, the story that he wants to tell. And that's, you know, it's like, what, like you said, Watchmen, he got the plot, he got all the characters right, it looked like
really good,
like the like comic book, like to a fault. But then when he added like his own style and his choices to it, it was like, oh, you're a big dummy. Like, you don't have any fucking idea what this is about. Like you like really no, you know, concept. And we've seen that from him over and over again with superhero comics and, or with comic books that he's tried to adapt. Like, you don't get this at all. You're, you know, it's like, I don't know what the fuck, you're like a frat boy that doesn't read and thinks he knows what Superman is about.
I get what Watchmen is.
All right. Well, as we are all on our work lunch break today, happy Thursday, by the way. We'll go ahead and wrap this up. We love this book. We love all of the League. But do you actually? That's a good question. Do you enjoy all of the League stuff? All the way to what, Tempest? Was that the last one?
To various degrees. There's things I like more than others. I mean, I think they've always been they were always a worthy thing of reading. Like some I liked better than others, but like I always felt like I got my money's worth.
Yeah,
like this is a thing of like merit, you know.
I
think it gets a little complicated as you go along. Would be my you might get a little, you might be a little too deep.
Yeah,
and twists and turns.
I love the first two volumes. I love the entire series, the whole run. But some of the later stuff it's borders on impenetrable, on some of it. So,
yeah,
I have to reread a bunch of them. I'm just going to keep reading it because it's been, I read them in such faraway chunks from each other, I think, too, sometimes that like I didn't totally get wrapped into all of them.
Yeah.
But like, I think as it goes along, it does get, I remember liking Tempest quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, overall, as far as like, I'm like, ah, this is cool. Yeah. I'm into this.
Whenever you get to Black Dossier, just be ready to read a lot.
No.
Black Dossier is one where I'm like, this is dense.
Yeah, it's really dense. It's a lot.
You put a lot of work into it. I don't know if I love all this.
Don't read that one late at night. You're not going to make it.
I loved Black Dossier, but it did take me a couple of reads to love it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really
I mean, it goes around so much, like, stylistically, and it's just like, it's probably the one that I'm gonna, like, where he really dives into, like, we're going to, like, embrace different, like, feels of old storytelling. Like we're going to make this part sound like this, you know, and like really go for it. And sometimes that can be a little bit, like you're saying, can be a little harder than other times, because you're asking a reader to kind of jump around a lot of like, actually we're going to do this and now we're going to do this. And then it's like, sometimes it's just hard to like wrap your head around. You like, it's almost like you need to take a breather, right? Where we're so used to a book where it's like, I'm going to read this whole damn thing in one go. And like, that's definitely a book where that's like, it's a challenge to do it all in one shot, because I just think your brain is jumping around so much to like these different things.
Yep. Little overload. Well, thanks for bringing this one up, Tom. It's one of my favorites. Thank you out there for listening and or watching. Check out our Patreon stuff at patreon.com/aroundcomics. And Sal, I think it's your
pick. Oh. What the hell was that?
That wasn't me.
I don't have one to pick. I did not pick one. Not prepared.
That's so. All right.
I will have
next week. We'll pick.
I will have we'll to find out. Out.
I don't want to pick one just off the top of my head. So,
no, that's fine. But you have
the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Volume 2.
No. We'll go through Black Dossier. We'll just read League of Extraordinary Gentlemen from beginning to end.
Keep going.
I'll have to think about it.
Yeah.
Let's do it next. Don't make a rash decision.
Which you can find out that and more. Next Thursday on our next Action Packed, I think we'll be back regular bat time,
nighttime,
regular bat channel.
Sleepy.
Thursday around
drunk
8:30 Central Standard Time. Thursday nights.
High,
drunk, happy.
Tired.
In the meantime,
in between time,
we're gonna be everywhere in
and around.